Born to a family in Malawi that pushed science education, Kingdom Kwapata grew up to be one of the best students in his home country. He was selected as one of 600 scholars among 100,000 eligible to attend the University of Malawi. Although he originally wanted to go into engineering and robotics, his interests evolved to focus on engineering plants through biotech. After graduating with a Master's of Science in Horticulture Biotechnology, he did his PhD in plant breeding, genetics, and biotechnology at Michigan State University, with the backing of a prestigious Fulbright Fellowship. Dr. Kwapata now works as a lecturer in molecular genetics and biotechnology for horticulture and forest crops at Lilongwe University of Agriculture and Natural Resources. He recently received an award from nonprofit and Agene collaborator Seeding Labs to receive lab equipment that will help accelerate his research. Listen to learn more about Dr. Kwapata's current work and thoughts on the need for more scientific collaboration across the globe. All right, Kingdom, so thank you for sitting down with me. And I just kind of wanted to go into a little bit of your background before we get too in depth about like kind of what research you've been doing. But tell us who you are, where you're coming from, and what you're doing here in the U.S. right now.
Yeah, so I'm Kingdom Kwapata. I'm from Malawi. And here in the U.S., I'm visiting an institution called Seedlings Lab that had donated equipment for biotechnology use at my local university in Malawi. My university is the Lilongwe University of Agriculture and Natural Resources, abbreviated as LUANA. And basically here I'm also trying to get networks and collaborations with a number of scientists and labs in the area of biotechnology. My background is a biotechnology scientist. I trained at Michigan State University, where I obtained my PhD in 2010 in plant breeding, genetics, and biotechnology.
Sure. And so I kind of want to get into how you ended up at Michigan State University. I guess starting off in Malawi, what was kind of your upbringing like in terms of education, and how did you end up getting into science and getting into agricultural biotech?
Yeah, I came from a family that was advocating for science training. Mm-hmm. My father was an educator. He's a retired university professor. So I was always encouraged us to actually, go into science. So I went into the local universities where I did my undergraduate and master's degrees in plant science.
And was it always biotech focused, or was it more like ecology? Or
it was more agronomy.
Okay.
Yeah. So basically, general plant science and crop production sciences. But then I was privileged to be a few candidates that got a Fulbright scholarship from the American government in 2008 to go to Michigan State to study PhD. Mm-hmm. In plant breeding, genetics, and biotechnology.
Sure. And so for your opportunities growing up and getting into university and things like that, was that really easy for you, or is that something that from allowance in general is not the easiest process to go through?
It's difficult because at the time when I was going into university, there was only one university in Malawi, which was the University of Malawi, which only admitted close to about maybe 600 students against a total population of potential students of about 100,000.
Wow.
That could potentially go into the university. So it was very competitive, and only the best could get in. And as I've said, out of 100,000 students, only 600 selected to go into this university. It was quite a challenge.
Sure.
Yeah.
And once you got there, did you always know that you wanted to go into more agricultural sciences or agronomical sciences, or did you have other priorities first that you kind of narrowed down onto that?
Well, typically, because it was difficult to get into universities, many of the students that enrolled in universities in Malawi at that time were selected into programs that initially they didn't select for. I myself wanted to do engineering. I wanted to do robotics. That's what I have always wanted to do.
Sure.
But because of the nature of our setup, I was thrown into the life sciences, agriculture in particular. But then over the years, I wanted to not do conventional agronomic research. I wanted to go into the more high-tech field of biotechnology. And that's how I worked hard to ensure that maybe I get a scholarship to mm-hmm. study in the USA.
Yeah, and so Michigan State ended up being your, was it like your ideal choice for that? I guess what kind of programs did they have that?
The Fulbright program that's run in my country, you know, thousands of students apply annually, and they only take at most 2 to 3. And the year that I was selected, were only 2 candidates that were selected to go for further education in the U.S. under the Fulbright program against a background of about 1,000 students
sure.
who applied. So it was, again, competitive.
Mm-hmm.
But then the Fulbright people were in a position to actually match my background and my interests with specific institutions. So mm-hmm. I did not choose Michigan State University,
yeah.
but it was chosen for me by mm-hmm. the Fulbright commission.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And how did you enjoy your time there once you got there? I guess both inside and outside of your schooling.
Well, it was, in terms of schooling, it was very enriching and eye-opener, new technology, fascinating faculty members. And it was just completely different. However, it was very cold there.
Yeah, sure.
And,
Michigan all the time.
Baby. Yeah, it was very cold there. And I think that was a bit of a challenge adjusting.
Mm-hmm.
And, culturally, things were different in the way things are done. And, of course, we had to adjust accordingly. But nevertheless, I enjoyed my time at Michigan State University, yes.
Mm-hmm. And whose lab did you work in while at Michigan State?
I worked with Professor Miriam Stickland, and her focus of research was in transgenic crops, engineering pharmaceutical products into crops, as well as enhancement of crops for various agronomic traits,
sure.
such as drought tolerance and disease resistance.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
And so you worked directly on some of those projects?
Yes, I did. I worked on projects on developing drought-resistant genes, transgenic beans, and also engineering of an anti-HIV vaccine into beans called Sleepy. I've also worked with some of her projects on, developing the next generation biofuel crops.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I managed to work in a wide range of, exciting projects.
Sure. And is there one of those particular kind of fields, whether it be engineering crops to be more resistant to drought or the more of the pharmaceutical side or the biofuel side that you're more interested in now?
Well, because of that wide background, I'm able currently to apply those techniques to the current research that I'm doing, since I supervise a host of a number of students, both at undergraduate and postgraduate. So some of my students are working in transgenics research studies, and particularly we're looking at cotton and cowpea,
mm-hmm.
and other students are working on the biofuel works. So we are, designing different, research programs for enhancing biofuels and generally, alternative fuel sources.
Mm-hmm.
So it has really helped me to have that particular broad background.
Sure. And so this is all stuff that you're now doing back in Malawi. What year did you graduate from Michigan State, and kind of how was your transition? How did your transition back to Malawi go?
Yeah, so I graduated in Michigan State in the year 2010 at the end. Stayed there for about 1 year to the end of 2011, and then went back to Malawi in 2012, where I joined the Lilongwe University for Agriculture and Natural Resources as faculty member for the molecular and biotechnology programs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so you're doing a lot more, so you're doing a lot of like biotech research now, doing a lot of like plant engineering. I guess in terms of the atmosphere for the general public push to have that kind of research, how does it differ between the U.S. and Malawi? Is there any pushback at home for that kind of research? For do people accept it societally, for instance?
It's a very big challenge because, you know, there's still a lot of resistance towards GMO crops, not just in Malawi, but the entire African region.
Mm-hmm.
And because of this, research is very... it's very difficult to get the licenses, for example, from government to conduct, you know, this kind of research. It's also very expensive. They charge very exorbitant fees, I think mainly just to discourage this particular research area, simply because to resonate with the feelings of the general public and the political atmosphere that really, you know, are not ready to promote this type of research for whatever reason is there. So
mm-hmm.
it's a big challenge, but I think we remain open-minded to demonstrate the potential of, you know, biotechnology and promotion of increased food security, but also other applications such as health, environment, that could be, you know, benefits to people in the developing world.
Mm-hmm. And so have you gotten to do any kind of like field tests with the different types of crops that you've developed, able to show their efficacy in different areas?
Yes, we have collaboration with Monsanto, which we are testing the efficacy of the BT cotton. So we have nationwide trials where we're testing it against the pod bowler insect that damages the cotton balls.
Could you give a quick description of what BT cotton is?
BT cotton is is a transgenic cotton variety that has been engineered specifically against an insect that damages the cotton plant, specifically the boll where the lint is where the lint generates from. So we are working on that. And also we're working on another plant with the BT gene. So a BT gene is a gene that was isolated from a bacteria and inserted into this particular cowpea plant. The same gene is available in cotton. So we are working with this again against an insect that damages the grain of cowpeas in the field. So we're doing evaluations to see whether this is efficacious. And so far we have seen promising results.
And are cotton and pea like two of the bigger crops that are produced in Malawi?
Not necessarily. Our biggest cash crop is tobacco, but and our biggest food crop is maize, corn. But these are other auxiliary crops that we grow to, you know, to supplement our, you know, food and of course cash inflows.
Mm-hmm. And do you think there will be production of corn or transgenic corn or tobacco in the future? Or
we are hoping that we could advance to especially corn.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we'll look at some corn plants that are drought resistant, because now with the climate change atmosphere where we are experiencing erratic rainfalls and unpredictable weather patterns, we would like to have plants that are resilient towards these changes, enabling people to still, you know, harvest despite the challenges of nature.
Mm-hmm.
So we are looking forward to collaborate with a number of institutions that have, you know, developed transgenic maize that are drought tolerant.
Mm-hmm. The other two projects that you kind of mentioned that you'd been working on in grad school, the production of HAB inhibitors in plants, For instance, are you still going forward with that kind of thing too? Or?
No, I've not advanced that research back home in Malawi simply because I think we are lacking specific equipment that will allow us to be able to pursue such type of research. But in the future, we are still hoping to build the capacity to be able to resume this research, because the issue of HIV/AIDS is still a very challenging problem on the African continent, in particular in Malawi, mm-hmm. where statistics have revealed more than about 10% of the population is infected with the HIV virus. So it's an issue that is dear to my heart,
mm-hmm.
and we are still trying to develop the requisite capacity to be able to deal with this problem.
Sure. And how would your kind of proposed GM crops help with that? Like, well, what's the mechanism behind how the HIV inhibitors would work?
Well, I think if we're to produce inhibitors in plants, basically we're using them as factories for the production of such inhibitors.
Mm-hmm.
And at a later stage, they would have to be purified mm-hmm. and then concentrated into drugs.
So it wouldn't be something where, like, somebody would be eating it and it would have...
No. It's just the plant would just be used as a medium for propagation,
mm-hmm.
Such as, like, a factory, a biofactory, where, the protein
mm-hmm.
will be produced and then later on purified and then concentrated into a drug
mm-hmm.
that can, you know, be given back to
sure
people.
So is it like that later end that you guys are missing equipment for doing the kind of purification process?
Yes. So such type of equipment currently we do not have,
mm-hmm.
and we're looking forward to building capacity to be able to have it and, you know, continue along this research.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I remembered reading that you had also done some work on, I can't remember what kind of plant it was, but making a more vitamin-rich, I think it was bean, okay, I could be wrong, that would have been used as a supplement for children with HIV.
Mm-hmm.
Is that true? Did I get that right?
Well, I've worked on beans, but specifically for for generating drought-tolerant bean
mm-hmm.
varieties. We've worked with a protein called HVA1,
mm-hmm.
which is a protein that protects the cells from heat stress.
Sure.
And we engineered these in beans so that they are able to withstand, you know, extreme heat conditions. So specifically, it was to enable them to become drought tolerant in one way.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. And then the last project was more on the biofuel side. I actually did a little bit of biofuels research in my PhD. And so you've done some engineering of plants so that they have reduced lignin, for instance, which mm-hmm. would make them easier to process into things like ethanol and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And are you still working on that kind of thing too?
No, I have. This was one of the projects that I was working with whilst with Michigan State University,
mm-hmm.
where my former professor or my professor was looking at producing lignases enzymes in corn that would reduce the amount of lignin,
mm-hmm.
Which inhibits enzymes to. To degrade cellulose. So it was an exciting project, but I have slightly shifted the focus
mm-hmm.
of my research in biofuels to more the current research that I'm doing with my students is basically to look at, you know, various microorganisms in the local environment that produce enzymes naturally to, you know, to degrade cellulose. So these are hydrolytic enzymes that are able to, you know, enable, you know, cellulose to be more accessible to other enzymes that can, you know, facilitate the fermentation of the same to ethanol.
Yeah.
So this is actually my research area.
That's your main research area at this time?
Yes, yeah. In terms of the biofuels.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I'm also working on developing systems of pyrolysis where we are trying to convert carbonaceous material into usable fuel, such as petrol or diesel, through the process of pyrolysis, whereby, you know, under extreme heat and pressure, we generate syngas, and then this syngas can, you know, part of it obviously is used as a heat source, but the byproduct of it is tar that can be, you know, cracked and then fractionated into various fuel compounds.
Sure. So you're moving a little bit back towards that engineering side that
that's
you
right.
wanted.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cool. And so for the project that you work on, where you guys are isolating bacteria and looking at their potential things to break down lignin and cellulose and other products, where are you guys sampling the bacteria from? Like, where are you guys going out?
So we sample these from, you know, random places in the environment. So we could look at sewage sources, we could look at soil samples, we could look at, you know, just anywhere where we could, you know, we could find bacteria. But specifically, we are looking at we sample mostly from areas where there's active debris and decomposition taking place, because naturally that's where we feel that we would find a huge population of microbes that are fermenters and they use that carbon source for their own energy needs. So those are the major places where, you know, we do sampling to get enzyme bacteria.
I'm sure you guys are finding like new species that people hadn't thought about before. And I think like every time somebody goes out into a new area, they always find bacteria that they never expected to be there.
Since our approach is it's a microbiome approach, whereby we're looking at the whole population of bacteria, because we believe that possibly if we're looking at the fermentation process or the breaking down of carbonaceous material by bacteria, it cannot be maybe one bacteria, it may be a community of bacteria.
Sure.
So that's the approach that we have kind of, taken.
Cool. With that kind of research, are your students super interested in it, being able to go out and, like, sample different things from the environment? I guess kind of what excites your students about the different projects that you're working on?
Yeah, I mean, I think the novelty of the projects is exciting to students, and the prospects that, you know, if some of these research areas we are successful, then, you know, we'll be, you know, the first to be able to claim that, you know, we can do this and that. So I think those prospects are, you know, very exciting to our students, yeah.
Sure. And so you've worked with Seeding Labs to help you get some, so I should say what Seeding Labs does. So Seeding Labs helps get used lab equipment or donated lab equipment out to kind of developing countries, places like Malawi, for instance, to help you guys get the equipment that you need to do the kind of research you want to do. What have you gotten from Seeding Labs that's helped you guys in your research?
Well, currently we are one of the 16 universities that have just received this award. We don't have the equipment physically yet, but we're in the process of selecting the equipment. So, you know, the type of equipment that we're hoping to get is equipment that will enable us to do, you know, microbiology work, for example, incubators to catch microbes, incubators to catch maybe mammalian cells, and, you know, centrifuges to be able to separate different, different fractions of compounds. So we are hoping to get such type of equipment that will, you know, build the foundation.
Mm-hmm.
Because we know that it's not going to be everything, but it will be a catalyst for us to be able to go to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And would you say equipment is something that's really holding you guys back from going forward with a lot of things?
Yes. Yeah. So the major restriction in terms of advancing research on the African continent is access to equipment. And then obviously reagents, secondly.
Mm-hmm.
So we believe that the work that Seedlings Lab is doing across the globe is very novel.
Mm-hmm.
But also it is work that is going to really enrich science exploration across the global south, which in a way is also going to translate into finding viable solutions for some of the critical challenges facing, you know, developing countries, you know, challenges of chronic hunger,
mm-hmm.
disease and malnutrition, environmental degradation, all those challenges. I think the equipment that Seedling Lab is donating across the globe will help to solve.
Mm-hmm. And are there other kind of collaborations that you've looked for to try to get more equipment? Are there any other ways that people can help you guys get access to equipment or anything like that?
I think so far, Seedlings Lab, to my knowledge, should be one of the, I think is the biggest donors of equipment to developing world. Because as you know, they do ship a container full of equipment, which no other organization, I think, in the world does that. So, you know, such economies of scales, I think they are, you know, that they're just so great that we have not come across any other institution that is willing to, you know, to do the same. But however, maybe your question was to say maybe if other people are doing it on a smaller scale. I think the challenge that is there on a smaller scale is that it becomes expensive in the long run,
mm-hmm.
to ship one equipment or two or three pieces of equipment from here to Africa, as opposed to, you know, in a container full of equipment.
Sure, yeah. Getting everything together makes it a lot easier, and having an organized system, have it all work out.
Mm-hmm.
All right, great. Is there anything else you would like us to know about your research or about your time here that we haven't touched on at all?
Well, just suffice to say that I think the Boston area is a good place to do research. I've had the opportunity to interact with a number of good companies, good scientists, and people who are really in the forefront of, you know, the next level of technology. So it is an inspiring city to be in, and you know, this is something that I hope to take back home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to also inspire others and motivate, especially the younger generation, to be thinking forward and be always optimistic,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, through creative thinking, we can solve a lot of problems.
Mm-hmm. And to be good for the scientists who are here as well to kind of pay more attention to things that are going on in the world too, to kind of reach out to you guys a little bit more. So hopefully we can help facilitate that a little bit too through things like this and also things that Seeding Labs does.
That's right.
Yeah.
I think that's the whole idea, to be able to start creating those networks and synergies, because I think the challenge that's there between, you know, the global south and the global north is not that the scientists in the global south are not competent enough. They are, you know, some of the best scientists that you could find anywhere in the world, and most of them were even trained, you know, in the US or Europe. But I think the challenges are those that I've mentioned earlier on, access to, you know, latest equipment and specifically finances to, you know, to do robust research. So if we could develop those particular programs and collaborations, I think would be able to advance science to a greater level before that we have not before imagined.
Sure. All right. Well, thank you very much for taking the time to sit down and talk to me. I know you've had a very busy week with your time here. But yeah, thank you very much.
No, thank you. It's a pleasure of mine to have been here. Thank you very much.
Sure. Dr. Kopata's research efforts and future goals are truly inspiring. We would like to thank Kingdom for taking the time to sit down and talk to us, and to thank Seeding Labs for connecting us with him. If you've been keeping an eye on the Edging blog, you'll have hopefully noticed that we're working with Seeding Labs to get plasmids to researchers in developing countries through 4 plasmid grants to be distributed throughout the course of the year. You can learn more about our collaboration with Seeding Labs by clicking on the link below. In addition, you can see and hear more from Kingdom Kopata by following the link to his recent speech at Seeding Labs' Positively Instrumental Award Ceremony. Thanks for listening to the Edging Podcast, a better way to share science.